I'm Arun Vanagopal, a senior reporter for the WNYC Race and Justice Unit, in for Melissa Harris-Perry. You're listening to The Takeaway. During his 4 years in office, Donald Trump dominated political news coverage. Whether we're talking about unwieldy press conferences, 140-character rants on Twitter, or campaign events designed to galvanize his base, so much of what we saw was, well, you know, unprecedented. And that includes his furious and sometimes dangerous war with the media itself. Even after he lost the 2020 election, Trump stayed in the headlines, claiming the results were, quote, rigged.
We were getting ready to win this election. Frankly, we did win this election.
And as we now know, Trump's rhetoric ultimately paved the way to the violent January 6th Capitol insurrection. For its part, the media has done a good job at calling out Trump's big lie and the actions it fueled, including the insurrection. Journalists have led major investigations looking into January 6th, and they've also repeatedly fact-checked politicians' lies. Yet, at the same time, the media more broadly has failed to communicate how much our democracy is under threat right now. And mainstream news organizations are rarely centering that story, instead opting to cover the political theater of Washington. For more on this, we're joined now by Margaret Sullivan, media columnist at The Washington Post, and Lewis Raven Wallace, author of The View from Somewhere and the host of the podcast of the same name. Margaret, Lewis, great to have you here.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Good to be here.
Margaret, in a recent piece, you wrote that in the year since the insurrection, the American news media has failed to create an overall editorial plan that fully recognizes just how much trouble we're in. What do you want to see that you're not seeing?
Right. So, Arun, I think that there's been, as you said, a lot of good work. There's been a lot of good fact checking. There's been a lot of good investigation. And, you know, certainly if you were paying attention, you could figure out what was going on quite easily. But I would like to see the news media, the mainstream media, if you will, center this story more and give it more of a focus so that we're communicating to the public that our democracy is actually threatened here, that it's not just a single story about what's happening with Trump, you know, day to day. It's not simply about, it's a broad story about voting suppression. It's a broad story about trying to, you know, break down the guardrails that keep our democracy whole. And I think we need to put it in a more centered, in a more focused way in our coverage.
And Lewis, much of your work takes on, I guess, the obstacles to getting there. One of those is the problem of objectivity in U.S. newsrooms, as you see it. For people who think objectivity is the point, how is it, in fact, failing us?
Well, I think it's been creating a situation for a long time where journalists feel like they have to kind of continue with this horse race coverage and, you know, both sides and he said, he said, and that approach, which has been going on since, you know, since before Trump and then during the whole Trump era, as it became kind of more and more obvious that reporters were reporting a side of the story that was often packed with lies and with white supremacist rhetoric. And so I think we've also seen a significant shift in that kind of attachment to traditional journalistic objectivity in mainstream newsrooms over the last few years, as folks have seen the urgency of, you know, naming the big lie, among other things.
Mm-hmm. And you argue that historically, this idea of objectivity has been shaped by whether someone is white as opposed to being black or trans or an immigrant. Why do these distinctions matter when we're talking about U.S. newsrooms?
Well, the assumption that journalists' sort of goal in order to be trustworthy should be to remain uncontroversial has never included an analysis of racial justice, right? And of the ways that black journalists throughout history and, you know, during, particularly during slavery and during Jim Crow and during the civil rights era and all the way up to now, you know, have often worked in a tradition of the fighting journalist. And that's where I think there's a lot of hope for us now, because we're not without models, right? For journalists who have stood up, who have not lived under a democracy in the United States and who have stood up to that effectively through their journalism. But the framework of objectivity has always kind of restricted and limited those movement voices and voices in resistance.
Margaret, Lewis refers to the horse race, back in the before times, pre-pandemic mode, when all of us were still working in our respective offices and newsroom. I remember looking up at the bank of TVs above my desk, and all of them were just muted. And I just take in the optics of cable news, the headlines and the scrolls and that sense of theater. And from that perch, I'm wondering, it was clear to me that the 2020 election coverage looked no different from, say, 2016 or 2012 coverage. It came down to the spectacle, to the horse race. And I'm wondering, how do you see the coverage? At its core, does it ultimately adhere to the spectacle?
Well, too much, it certainly does. And that's a great image that you bring up of looking at just the, not listening to the voices, but just seeing what cable news is presenting to us. I mean, a lot of it is built around this kind of, it's a conflict, it's a game. Who's up, who's down, even the most important pieces of things that are completely core to our democracy are still viewed as, oh, the Democrats lost that one today, or the Republicans are winning, when actually this is about such things as, are we all going to be able to vote fairly? So I think that journalists can overcome that by actually sort of standing for something. And Lewis makes a great point that, this kind of false neutrality doesn't serve us very well, and definitely, as we're talking about, doesn't represent all of America.
And Lewis, what do you think President Joe Biden's election to the White House meant for this kind of political coverage? Did it go back to what it was pre-Trump? Was it sort of just in that same holding pattern?
I would say that it's been a holding pattern for the most part. I think it would definitely be a mistake for anyone to think, oh, well, Trump's out of office, so these problems that came along with him are gone. But it doesn't seem to me that most journalists are thinking that. I mean, I think there's a problem for all journalists at more of the kind of business and distribution level about how our stories are being distributed and which stories tend to kind of trend. So you can do a really wonderful, complex, deep dive into, crumbling democracy, and it can be less popular than the latest story about Trump. That's a good example, actually, about Trump himself and something that he said. And so that's a challenge that we're all facing because of how media is being distributed and the lack of accountability for social media companies in kind of regulating dis and misinformation. But I would say since Biden that we're pretty much in the same, position.
Margaret, let's go a little deeper with the insurrection last year and how that was covered by the media. What kind of coverage did we initially see?
Well, at first it was sort of most of the, again, I, use the phrase mainstream media, the sort of elite national journalism outlets were covering it as a huge news event. And, at that time, even key Republicans, Mitch McConnell, Kevin McCarthy, were all saying, this is horrible. This is clearly Trump's fault. And so, the coverage was very oriented toward what exactly just happened. Since then, I think it's gone more into the political realm of Trump and his allies saying that, well, it wasn't that bad, and it wasn't the fault of people who are trying to support Trump. All of these kind of misapprehensions have been spread more. And, the news media needs to make a decision about how much they want to magnify that and how much they want to decide against having people who represent false claims given a megaphone on the major talk shows or in our major newspapers and so on.
I guess based on just your knowledge of people who run newsrooms, who run news media, what holds them back from pivoting towards something that you think would be more appropriate for this moment in history?
It's funny. I think about that a lot. I guess I think that there's a real, really strong feeling of wanting to be fair to all sides and to do things basically in a time-honored or tested way that has been the tradition of journalism. So when you pivot to, thinking of yourselves as sort of a pro-democracy organization that does news, that's a big, kind of mental paradigm shift that I think it's easier for that to happen at a magazine, for example. I've seen The Atlantic kind of make that shift in recent weeks, and more difficult to do so at a big, you know, traditional newspaper or TV network.
Right. Lewis, you were fired from your, I guess, your last mainstream media job for not being objective enough and for questioning the conventions of objectivity. How much do you think has changed since then?
I think for a couple of years, that happened in 2017, right after Trump was inaugurated, and I had written that Trump benefited from white supremacy and transphobia, and that was considered kind of overly partisan or taking a stance. And I think that many, many individual journalists and some outlets have moved a lot on that question over the last 5 years. I mean, in the summer of 2020, I started receiving apologies from people who had, you know, who had worked with me or who had seen me get fired and been silent about that at the time, sort of saying, oh, you know, we're in the middle of these uprisings and the coronavirus and everything is falling apart. And, you know, maybe you were right and we should have said something earlier. And so I think one of the things that's been going on with news leadership is a lack of perceived self-interest in standing up for democracy or standing up to white supremacy. But I think that's a mistake. I think we all have a self-interest in that, and that these organizations aren't going to be able to exist as such in a kind of post-democratic environment. And so news leaders would do well to be looking to movement leaders and, you know, leaders of grassroots efforts to defend voting rights, to learn how to do that, because we're all going to have to do it.
You mentioned the protests as being sort of this pivot point for a lot of the journalists who had been close to you and who were now apologizing. Why do you think that was such an important moment for them? Kind of a wake-up call.
I think that George Floyd's death and the video and the story, obviously that tragedy affected a lot of people really deeply. But I also think the kind of combination in 2020 of pandemic, racial violence and racial terror continuing, the uprisings, and the fear that we were going to have this kind of failed state election really overcame people and shifted a lot of people's perspective on kind of the status of democracy in the U.S. And I would hope that journalists and everybody don't sort of slip back into complacency now, you know. And I think that's the point that Margaret's been making, is that we're in a very high risk situation democracy wise. And so that moment of urgency needs to become a kind of attitude of urgency. And we need to look toward solutions and movement building and what people are doing at a grassroots level to fight this. You know, it doesn't have to be a constant ring the alarm, but more like, what can we do to fight this?
In a sense, it has to advocate for democracy, which is something, advocacy, which I guess a lot of journalists are really feel allergic to.
Yeah, advocate for democracy and also report on how to advocate for democracy. In some ways, I think that's even more helpful, right? Because people don't want to hear another, like, this is bad, you should do that. But how to do it, you know, what you can show up for that would actually protect our democracy. That's the kind of valuable news I think people need now.
News you can use. Not to be overly cynical, Margaret, but can the same news media that elevated Donald Trump, the spectacle, the sound bites, the heartland appeal, be realistically expected to change at this moment?
Well, I think we have changed, you know, and I'll say we, because I feel as though I'm a part of it as well, not just an observer. I think we have changed. I've seen a lot of change. I think we had to understand that Trump was a, you know, a whole new sort of kind of elected official to cover, and the normalization that went on for such a long time, you know, eventually people kind of got over that somewhat. So I do think we've changed, and more change is necessary.
Margaret Sullivan is a media columnist at The Washington Post, and Lewis Raven Wallace is author of The View from Somewhere and host of the podcast by the same name. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.